Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Navigating Netflix. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm the host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, and we are joined yet again by Paul Verge of RemedyRadio.com and Tony Myers and Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com. Welcome aboard, gentlemen. And this week's episode, episode two of NavigatingNetflix.com, we're going to visit a land called Idiocracy. It's a film from 2006 by Mike Judge, who, of course, you should know from Beavis and Butthead or Office Space or even one of his later films, Extract. And the film Idiocracy is one that is deceptively important. On the surface, it looks like kind of a dumb comedy about scatological humor and stupid people, and it's kind of silly.
At the dawn of the 21st century, the Army began a top-secret experiment.
Meet Joe Bowers, our first subject for the human hibernation experiment. As you know, this is highly classified. However, if successful, we believe humans can be stored indefinitely.
However, the trial run was prone to human error.
See you in a year.
And Joe slept slightly longer than expected. Half a millennium, to be exact. From Mike Judge, creator of Office Space and Beavis and Butthead.
Oh my God!
If you were the smartest person in the world...
This goes in your mouth. This one goes in your butt. Hang on a second. This one goes in your mouth.
And we're stuck with the dumbest people in history.
If you have one bucket that holds 2 gallons and another bucket that holds 5 gallons, how many buckets do you have?
Two?
What would you do?
Excuse me. I'm actually supposed to be getting out of prison.
You're in the wrong line.
I'm the smartest guy in the world? Says who?
The IQ test you took in prison. You got the highest score in history.
You're even smarter than President Camacho.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of America!
In the year 2505.
We got this guy. He's gonna fix everything.
So you smart, huh?
The ordinary will be considered extraordinary.
I thought your hair would be bigger.
Idiocracy.
For the smartest guy in the world, you're pretty dumb sometimes.
But once you start to dig into it and you see that it is an allegory and it is a cautionary tale about our future, I think. So, Rich, let me throw it over to you because I believe this maybe was your suggestion that we do Idiocracy. So what makes this film really stick out and important for you?
Let me first start with the word scatology that you referenced, which means the study of feces. So the future, looking at it through the eyes of Mike Judge, is the look into the landfills, look into the waste of humanity, and the ignorance that's kind of outgrowing the consciousness and results in these, you know, sad situations, which he wants to draw attention to through comedy. I first saw Idiocracy the same night that I saw Joe Rogan Live. And there's a lot of content in Joe's comedy which ties in with the themes that Mike Judge puts out there, insofar as we're getting dumber, that the dumb people are outbreeding the smart people, that these things are going on and on without being put in check, and who's making sure that the smart people are having kids, and all these sorts of ideas. So what you have in Rogan's comedy as far as adults with artificially extended adolescence and a lack of education juxtaposed to Mike Judge's comedy, which is in Hollywood theatrical form, in the form of a story, and he's showing that if left unchecked, this pattern gets even worse, and the future doesn't really stand a chance against itself, which is why he introduces the MacGuffin of time travel as a way to introduce a totally average person from the present into the future where they have a pro wrestling president and they're all emotional and driven like children are instead of intelligence over their emotions, right? And so in looking at it through those two kind of lenses in the same evening, it became very profound to me that one of the things that artists have been noticing is the lack of education and the growing cynicism where people are taking actions without really concentrating or considering the results and the cause and effect of those actions. And so what they have in, you know, in the movie Idiocracy is in the future there's the great garbage calamity, this tidal wave of garbage from the landfills that comes down, and that plays a major part in the story. And it's not just a theatrical motif that Judge puts in there. It's a very serious message that is presented in comedic terms, which I think you know, makes a point to the audience, if you're paying attention, that if left unchecked, our actions right now, which are irrational, really start to tear the world apart.
So perhaps for folks, and sorry to interrupt, but let's maybe just at least give folks the briefest of introduction, and we'll just read the paragraph from Netflix. To test its top-secret human hibernation project, the Pentagon picks the most average Americans it can find, an Army private, played by Luke Wilson, and a prostitute, played by Maya Rudolph, and sends them to the year 2505 after a series of freak events. But when they arrive, they find a civilization so dumbed down that they're the smartest people around. Mike Judge and Eaton Cohen of Beavis and Butthead reteamed for this futuristic farce.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting that they I don't remember seeing any kids in the film. It's like all of the adults in the film are kids. There's, I think, one child, one like teenager who won a contest and got to be a cabinet member. And I can't remember which secretary he is, but essentially it's Mike Judge's representation of all these different systems that we have, right? The legal system, the government system, the our knowledge of growing food, how we resolve conflicts, our media system. And I think it's really interesting that a lot of people had never heard of Idiocracy, that it was one of those movies that kind of flew under the radar and people are like, how did I miss this, you know, when it was in a theatrical run? Well, the thing is that Fox, 20th Century Fox, actually sat on the film for a year and didn't release it on purpose because they said they didn't know how to market the film and that the test screenings had been disastrous. But in reality, I think Mike Judge had sort of pissed off a lot of the advertisers or the people who probably thought they were getting, you know, brand recognition or product placement, and instead he kind of turned it on its ear, turning, you know, companies like Starbucks into a place where you can get prostitution services, or having, you know, Carl's Jr. advertised by swearing at its customers and taking their children away. So it's definitely a commentary on how we've prolonged our adolescence to a ridiculous degree, but also how allowing that to happen allows these corporations to essentially dominate our lives to the point where the quality of our life goes down so low, what we're too dumb to even know that our quality of life has been squashed.
And go ahead, Tony.
Well, it's interesting to note how Mike Judge's humor is very explicit. It's very out there. But with all these underlying connotations, so he puts it, Idiocracy, in this form where all these adults have become complete morons and corporations take over the world and become so irrational themselves that they, you know, have pretty much dumbed themselves down as well. And the key here is the underlying connotations. And in today's society, it's interesting how in the beginning of the movie they lay out that the dumb people are outbreeding the smart people. But in reality, what we're experiencing is that Darwin provided the justification for our current education system. And like, what the interesting thing is that how they set up this movie is the smart people weren't able to breed enough and were outbred, which actually was happening was once the scientific justification is that they're allowed to put it in the B.F. Skinner box and Pavlovian conditioning and all these different things that now extrapolate to our education system, our society. But it's interesting because we see the same irrationality starting to trickle up and up to higher forms of education people that rule us now. So. And it's I just find that he stays in his character with his very explicit form of humor, but he does well to show a lot of oxymoronic phrases and a lot of just it's if you know how to look at behind some of the phrases and some of the advertising, the other things in the movie, it kind of points to some of the instances we're now experiencing in our culture, such as genetically modified foods and. So forth, and mass scale agriculture, and how much that's destroying the world, and all these different type of irrationalities. So we could extrapolate this to all different areas. That's we find conflict in our world today.
Going back to Paul, what you just referenced about the release of the film, if we look even at Wikipedia, and this is all pretty well sourced and cited, NPR, Austin American Statesman, New York Times. The film's scheduled release date was August 5th, 2005, according to Mike Judge. In April 2006, a release date was set for September 1st, 2006. In August, numerous articles revealed that the release was put on hold indefinitely. Idiocracy was released as scheduled, but only in 7 cities: LA, Atlanta, Toronto, Chicago, Dallas, Houston, and Mike Judge's hometown of Austin, and expanded to only 130 theaters, not the usual wide release of 600 or more theaters. According to the Austin American-Statesman, 20th Century Fox, the film's distributor, did nothing to promote the movie. While posters were released to theaters, no movie trailers, no ads, no press kits were released, the film was not screened for critics, and a lack of concrete info from 20th Century Fox led to speculation that Fox may have actively tried to keep the film from being seen by a large audience while fulfilling a contractual obligation for theatrical release ahead of a DVD. So this is interesting, and I did kind of follow this as this was playing out at the time. I remember hearing about this new Mike Judge movie, and Paul, as you referenced, I think the working title of it was 3001. So that's kind of a vague title, and I'm sure some of those companies that are in the film, Carl's Jr. and Costco and others, probably thought, hey, you know, this will be good exposure for us. But when the finished product was called Idiocracy, I'm sure that probably pricked their ears up immediately, and then they saw the film and saw what a scathing take on consumer culture it was. But I remember reading about it and kind of following it and seeing that it wasn't really being released, that they more or less kind of dumped it, and I had no opportunity to see it in a theater. I find it really interesting that they also ultimately changed the poster art. So on its IMDb entry and on the Wikipedia entry, you can see the original poster, which is a play on Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man, with turned into a fat guy holding a video game remote control and beer and all of that kind of stuff. When it finally dumped out on DVD, they changed it, and they dumbed down the poster and just make it a regular photo of Luke Wilson, which, of course, is an actor that people will recognize and would make them want to watch the film. So, for, you know, beginning to end, this film kind of seemed, you know, doomed that it was never going to make it into theaters.
Well, I'm sure a lot of those companies also advertise with Fox on their other stations. And, you know, like Costco is represented as a giant unending city that has, like, you know, a subway train that takes you around. And the infrastructure is basically shown to be, you know, completely unmanageable. They're not to spoil one of the great moments, but they're essentially watering their crops with a Gatorade equivalent and wondering why crops aren't growing. So it's like that level of dumbed downness where they can't even maintain the food supply, so everyone eats processed goop from a big bucket while they sit in their toilet chairs watching the newest episode of Ow My Balls, which is the most popular show on the Violence Channel. And so all these different representations are essentially Mike Judge just probably sitting down and going, what would every interaction with the system be like in, you know, 500 years from now if the dumbed-downness continued on, the prolonged adolescence continued on, and the corporate dominance continued on down their quote-unquote logical yet irrational paths? And so each of the scenes as almost a vignette gets to reveal, like, that the justice system is a farce where, you know, the lawyers just can make these completely irrational argument, like, this guy's a dick, and first of all, just look at him. And that's considered like a winning argument. And the fact that the prison system is just one big line of people going in and out, and the financial system, one of the biggest things, they have the mark that the UPC code that everyone gets tattooed onto them. Otherwise you're considered unscannable. So that's the system of identity. And because Luke Wilson has never been through this process before, he's like getting tattooed and the thing's asking for his name, and he's like, he's not sure that he even wants to go through with it. And the machine ends up calling him, saying his identity is not sure. And that's that's officially his name for the rest of the movie. He ends up taking on this identity where he doesn't get to be his own name anymore.
I do enjoy, too, that, you know, as, okay, the machine recognizes his name as not sure, but when you print it on a license, you know, just in, you know, you put the last name first, so then it becomes sure or not. I enjoy the names and think, you know, in my kind of theater background, the names of characters and all those things, you know, they're not, you know, accidental. They're always kind of on purpose. I wanted to mention too that, Rich, this is interesting that our second episode of Navigating Netflix is another experiment, as our first episode was about an experiment. This is yet another experiment, and I enjoyed that they said, you know, we tested it on dogs and everything.
The purpose of this experiment is to watch this film and pay particular attention to the set rhetoric, the artistry with which these sets are decorated, because everything seems to have a purpose in this future world of Mike Judge. Their clothes are all advertisements. They're coming out of a what looks like a toilet seat dispenser on the wall, and they're ubiquitous. Just everything has ads. All the lampshades, everywhere that there can be advertising space. When the guy's watching Ow My Balls, all around the edge of their TV, it looks like all these ads, you know, just screaming at you, trying to get your attention. He has this seat where he doesn't have to get up. He can sit and go to the bathroom. He has a tube with a nipple on it so that he doesn't have to interrupt his baiting, which is a slang term for the favorite pastime in the future where people just sit around and watch the masturbation channel, and they have chairs that are equipped such that they can do this 24 hours a day, it seems. And so when you look into the future that Mike Judge is painting, I think that he's, you know, he's got a good sense of irony as well as comedy, and I think that people who's the guy who made Supersize?
Morgan Spurlock
did a recent movie where he got advertisers to pay for the whole movie and sold all this corporate sponsorship to pay for the movie, which is kind of like what Mike Judge had done years ago, marketing it as 3001. It's going to be a comedy. He got all those people to buy in. Then he changes the tone. He doesn't really change the script too much. It just changes the tone. It adds some more dark irony that reflects the reality but can still make it through there with the comedy. So if you pay attention to the set rhetoric, that's a key way that filmmakers communicate with their audiences. What's on the set? What's here? What information are they giving you in addition to the dialogue?
And it's interesting, if you look at set rhetoric, a lot of that's kind of, it's in the background a little bit. But he does, you know, you have the characters up in front, you're focusing on the story, but all the stuff, all the corporate satirism all around it. And, you know, if you can take in the, if you can identify the full set, like Rich is saying, and notice like the clothing, the names of the corporations, all these different elements, you can therefore come up, you can see the underlying connotations that Mike Judge is trying to push on us and show that, like, look, this is the way we're moving. And I wonder if he's ever experienced resistance before in the past with movies, because he's always been known to be a very blatant, gross satirist in a way, using gross types of humor and so forth and so on. But he always does so with very intelligent, planted themes. And it's important, like Rich said, to have taken that whole rhetoric with that whole context, both the set and the story, and make sure you pick up on the underlying connotations of themes going throughout.
There really is a lot going on within the background, and this film does, you know, it does warrant multiple viewings, and I did so in preparation for this episode. Paul, something else you mentioned as far as being unscannable and not having your UPC code tattooed on your wrist, that's something, you know, that really speaks to, I think, you know, future scenarios that we worry about, you know, and is talked about in the alternative media, whether that's, you know, microchipping or RFID. But the other thing they put in there is, and when they're trying to escape at one point, and the scanners keep catching his new UPC code, so they're able to track him wherever he goes as he's trying to escape, and they realize that he's in a car at some point, so the car gets remotely disabled. Those are things that, you know, fortunately we're probably a long way away from toilet chairs and the masturbation channel and things like that. But as far as UPC codes tracking you and remote, you know, disableization of cars and things like that are very close, if not essentially here already.
Exactly, that's right. And, you know, it's just all films about the future are really about now. And so, you know, you look at something like Star Trek from the 60s, well, it was a big deal. They had these communicator phones. Well, now we have cell phones, and it's not that big a deal. And so I think a lot of these things, you know, even 5 or 10 years ago, it seems like, oh, that's so far off. But then we're moving towards this supposed disposable technology, and it reflects that the future is not that far off. So it is a warning that, you know, the state and these corporations' dominance into our lives, the state's dominance and invasion into our lives, along with these corporations, allows just a complete control of essentially treating us like human androids, right? Because if you've got this identity that you think you are as opposed to being a human being, then you're going to fit within that mold, especially as they make that mold tighter and tighter in terms of restrictions and everything. So it's creepy because of the amount of control that having these pieces of technology allows the state or corporations to have over us. But, you know, being aware that these invasive things even exist is the first step to kind of combating them or at least avoiding them to the best of your ability. And it's real technology. There's sound projection technology that exists today where you can be walking by a pop machine and it's broadcasting a laser of sound, a thin wall of sound, that so that when you walk by it, you hear the can sound when you walk by, and then immediately you're going to turn towards the source of that sound and see this pop machine there. So in that way, they're essentially getting inside your head. And Idiocracy doesn't go that far. It doesn't go as far as it could in certain areas, but in other areas where it seems like it's gone so far, it's actually closer to reality than you think. And that includes like the medical system, how they've got, you know, casino slot machines in the medical system, and there's no actual human interaction other than sticking a few, you know, prongs inside your body so that this machine can tell you what's wrong with you. And when you finally do get to see a doctor, his advice is to essentially smoke a cigar and kind of say nothing but with a bunch of words and then charge you like $3 billion. So,
and it's hard, you know, it's hard to play an idiot in a movie and do it really well. And I think the two of the best in the film are Dax Shepard and Justin Long, who plays the doctor you were just referring to. He just has one short scene, but it's done really well, and it's so believably stupid. And when you were talking about the cabinet levels within the, you know, the White House that you mentioned, you know, the little kid who won a contest and he got to be a cabinet level, and some of the other people. But isn't it interesting? Do you remember the most obviously visually stupidest person on the cabinet? Do you remember what his job was?
Yeah, he was the
education.
Exactly. That says something. So let's actually, let's touch on, because the film repeatedly mentions using logic and reason, such as when, you know, Joe's in the court for the first time and, you know, trying to battle against arguments such as, you know, like we just said, you know, well, just look at him. You know, he's dumb and stuff. He states his case logically and passionately that we hear from the voiceover, and it does no good. And it's only later, you know, when he figures out that, geez, you know, I got to give up on logic and reason and just tell these people that, oh, I can talk to plants. And, oh, okay, they'll believe that. You know, he gives up on logic and reason and just makes up stupid things that they'll instantly go for to get the point across and to sort of save humanity.
It's evident that the future that Mike Judge paints out is screaming for the reemergence of the trivium. That there is a connection, a cause and effect connection between their loss of reason on one hand and their ill situation where their actions are in direct conflict with their needs of survival. They've been schooled into existence. They have unlearned how to survive. They have lost a reason and logic in these ways of using the five senses to know what exists and dismiss that which does not exist. And it's by that that man and man alone is able to survive as a volitional consciousness, because without reason, what you're left with is, you know, instincts that are not unerring. In other words, since we're not psychic, we need reason in order to survive. We need reason to make informed choices. And it's evident that the future that Mike Judge is painting out is devoid of logic, which is law of identity, which he mocks all the time when the barcodes and stuff like that. They have a loss of phonetical reading. They're using pictographs. They've actually moved away from words, and they're just doing it by pictures now. They have little buttons. Instead of saying something themselves and knowing how to use language, they have something that's pre-recorded by a smart person who died a long time ago, right? And so they've lost their use of language, and language is the key through which you know your existence. This is what general grammar refers to, because everything has a word associated to it. All those individual parts of any gizmo or gadget has words associated with those parts. Once you learn the nomenclature of the individual parts, then you see how the parts fit together, then you build a level of understanding, and then you can communicate it to other people, and this becomes wisdom. This is the whole basis of human existence, of learning, how to overcome the obstacles in our environment and the natural predators that we have on this earth, including other people with a higher level of education who have been preying on us for years and years and years. And that's what is showing through in the origins of the Mike Judge film, where they're showing you how humanity took this downward spiral and what happened. Well, it then becomes very logical and reasonable.
I thought it was also interesting that there was really no real representation of the quote-unquote elite class. It's almost as if they themselves had been dumbed down or were out of the story, and the people who were in
power, which is really President Camacho, is like an ex-wrestler, you know, who lays down the law in the Senate by just pulling out a machine gun and firing it in the air to calm everyone down. And so it's this whole might makes right mentality, in where he, you know, he, just like Obama, he's got the two telescreens or whatever feeding him words, and it's like, shit, I know shit's messed up right now, but we got this plan, you know. And it's just like, that's exactly what goes on today, right? If you're losing control of the crowd, just act tough and you'll get them back under your sway temporarily. You can feed them with more propaganda and then pin all their hopes and dreams on this like one, you know, small chance kind of thing. And of course, when that turns out not to be to give them the results they want in 1 week, they don't have all the world's problems solved in 1 week. Well, then we got to feed this guy to the monster trucks. And so that's the final, you know, essentially like Rome, they've brought back the gladiator games, except it's called rehabilitation, and it's what they do to prisoners or people who've committed capital crimes against the society. And it's just, they've turned it into execution via monster truck.
It's kind of that Running Man scenario where they kind of dangle the opportunity and the possibility that if you win, you might be able to, you know, escape and win your freedom. But the game is rigged to where you're never supposed to win.
Well, you know, it only took about three. If we bring this back to our own situation now, it only took about three generations, four generations with the installation of the Prussian schooling system, where we start to see the numbing and dumbing down of our society. And what's interesting in Mike Judge's film with the landfills and all this problem with garbage, and the people have lost the language and the ability to speak or relate to reality. And you can see this. And the one thing I find interesting is that they had all this technology, though, right? They had all, you know, the huge monster trucks and the large monitors, because they needed that type of information coming in. It's the only way they could find a way to relate to reality. And it was we can see these things happening now because our brains, especially now for kids sitting in front of TVs, it's you catch on to quick headlines, but you don't know how to learn how to read correctly and learn how to pick substance out of long paragraphs and, you know, develop language skills and those types of things. And that's happening more and more and more. So these things he makes very explicit in the film. However, we can see it starting now, and especially with the installation of the Prussian education system, what's been going on.
When I was going to mention, Paul, what you said really struck me, and that hadn't hit me yet, that in this film there's no elite class. And that's usually a mainstay of kind of dystopian films, where there is that sort of, whether it's the, you know, barricaded tower or the city, you know, that's secluded somewhere that the rich and elite have been able to, you know, hide away, whether that's during, you know, zombie apocalypse or whatever kind of scenario. But yeah, that's interesting. That's not within this film. And our two characters who are sent into the future, our average Joe and then the prostitute, I find it interesting that Maya Rudolph's character, when put into the future, of course, Joe is freaked out. But Maya Rudolph's character doesn't seem to really be that disturbed by it. And she kind of picks up, in a way, just as she left off, you know, essentially being, you know, a prostitute working on the streets, she's got street smarts. So when she lands in the stupid future, she doesn't seem perplexed by, oh my God, I'm, you know, 500 years into the future. She just instantly shifts into, well, I'm going to have to, you know, maybe alter how I survive on the streets, but it doesn't really change that much.
She's lost her sense of cause and effect, and that becomes clear when she talks about Upgrad. Upgrade, right? Well, when he's like, he's been dead 500 years. She's like, I don't care. He will find a way to collect his money. She didn't get that she was in the future in the first place, really. She just thought she was in a strange place where everyone was poor and kind of dumb and this sort of thing, right? So when she refers to the fact that her pimp is still looking for his money, 500 years later. That is clear that she's likewise irrational, has no sense of cause and effect, and that's the break. When you become irrational, that's what you've broken. You've broken the links of cause and effect upon which gravity and everything else are functioning. And when you break, that's your natural connection to natural law and natural reality, that which exists. These things you can't overcome with a subjective mentality or a proprietary mindset. These are rules of the environment in which we operate. And if you can't understand those rules and comprehend them and work with those forces instead of against them, it becomes very, very hard to survive. And that's what he's showing in the future.
Maybe take two normal people and in the present day when they start out in the film, and then, you know, they get cryogenically frozen and awake 500 years in the future. It's interesting to note that at that time, 500 years before, if she can communicate, but still have, you know, a higher mentality than the people around her, but she could communicate and understand the level of intelligence these people have, you can already start to see that back then, 500 years before, the numbing down process had begun. All right. So she had to learn how to survive in a totally different way, you know, living on the streets and so forth.
Yeah, and if anything, the only representation of any kind of elite or authority class is the military guys at the beginning, and they show that they're corrupt, right? They show the one guy who's in charge of the operation so enamored by the pimp lifestyle that he wants to become one himself, and that's kind of like the catalyst for why Joe and Rita get left in their cryogenically frozen states for so long. They're supposed to originally do it for a year, and because the program director gets arrested for becoming a pimp, that's it. It changes the course of human history. And so that kind of sets up that, yeah, you know, this elite class was already corrupt and maybe on their way to being taken down. But it's funny to think of the elite setting up this kind of technocracy that can run itself so that they can, you know, not have to worry about managing the world's affairs and just keep the people at a general level of dumbness. But what would happen if they then themselves, like, became extinct and the Guardians ended up, you know, either disappearing or retreating to the underground or whatever and removed themselves or went to a space station or who knows what, right? I just thought it's funny that they're absent and there's no representation of family in this future. There's no, like, the one time I remember seeing kids was like a birthday party at the when Joe finally gets out of his coffin and sees what Fuddruckers has become, and there's a kid's party there. And that's it. That's the only time I remember really seeing children. So it doesn't really show if it's the state now raising them in test tubes like Brave New World style, or if there's still some dumbed down version of the family that still tries to, you know, keep it together, which, you know, by the end of the movie you're like, okay, well, certainly there's relationships and family, but it just doesn't seem to be. There's certain things that for whatever reason just aren't represented. And then the last thing I wanted to say was about Rich identifying the trivium and how the absence of it leads to this future. I think that's part of what Mike Judge is communicating, is that there's these, you know, errors in grammar, that's a huge deal in the future, that nobody has any logic, and thus nobody communicates effectively. They all speak in hillbilly, ghetto slang, valley girl grunts and hand motions. And so to them, you know, average Joe sounds pompous and they describe him as faggy, but like essentially they're saying he sounds effeminate to them because he sounds sophisticated. So in that regard, it almost made me think, well, maybe at some point the dumb people overthrew the elite class out of stupidity, and that's kind of why they're left in this, like, that's how far the elite class got to a certain point, and then they're gone now.
And when, you know, as we referenced, of course, when the problems aren't fixed within 1 week, they immediately riot and want to come to the White House and destroy everyone. So, yeah, you can speculate that had happened several times before, probably.
Yeah, it's the mobocracy, right? Democracy in action.
Right, yeah. You know, you can draw parallels here with Joe Rogan and his, what we were just talking about in the beginning when we started filming, his one comedy skit where he talks about how the dumb common people uprose and took the smart ruling class over and, you know, developed this hierarchical power structure pyramid that destroyed society. And he thinks, like, they took over this unbelievable structures that we had developed over time, but like because of a great catastrophe or something, they just kind of decided to take it over. And it kind of has parallels there with Idiocracy because of what's happened. In the future, it's gotten so numbed down, it makes you wonder, well, I guess they had the avalanche, the trash avalanche, right, as the great catastrophe. But
which, ironically, is caused by a beer can, which is recyclable.
Right, yeah, you're right. That's the like the you know, you see it building and starting to maybe shake, but yeah, it's that last can that drops on it that causes it to avalanche. There was something too, a few points about, you know, the idiots in the future. There are a few moments where they laugh at our smart characters for saying, you know, you really thought that there was going to be that thing. Or they mentioned something about, you know, when we discover that they're not using water to grow plants anymore, which of course they're not growing. And he, you know, Joe gives them the idea of, you know, putting water on the plants. And they say, you mean like out of the toilet? And one of the characters, and I think it's the little kid in the cabinet, says something about, you know, well, then why don't plants grow out of the toilet? They go, hey, wow, you're pretty smart. Maybe you should be the president.
Well, that just demonstrates a misunderstanding of the basic grammar of what makes life life, right? And when they start putting Brondo on the plants, it's because Brondo is a super powerful international organization that has no national boundaries. They're conquering emerging markets. And if people buy it, better for Brondo. And the only market that Brondo hadn't yet conquered was the toilet market. They hadn't convinced people to run Brondo everywhere else. They ran it through the drinking fountains. When he gets a drink, he's like, what's this? This is supposed to be water. You mean like out of the toilet? This guy drinks out of the toilet, right? And so overcoming their understanding starts with, let's observe how plants used to grow. What is missing now? What is the missing component? What is the logic after you understand these parts? How does these things work together? It, again, it's a loss of the trivium that Mike Judge is reflecting in the future, because people don't have the ability to learn anything for themselves. And that learning starts with observation of what exists through the five senses, and then processing that by asking the five W's plus how. And then once you identify what exists, dismiss the arbitrary, remove the contradictions, you are left with pure knowledge and understanding, which you can then communicate through a form of rhetoric, the active literacies like writing, speaking, filmmaking, all these sort of things. So what you're seeing is a basic loss of how to learn anything from yourself for yourself. And that starts with asking substantial questions and knowing how to get valid answers. It's removing the stimulus and response through which we're all controlled until you put thinking in the middle. And once you put thinking in the middle, then you can start to learn. That is the learning process. It's a three-step process, not a two-step process. Two steps, you're under control. Stimulus response, that's Skinner box conditioning. When you put the thinking back in, so you have grammar, the individual parts, the understanding, that's how understanding what you're observing and putting it all together, removing the contradictions. And then you have wisdom, something you can act upon with certainty and get repeatable results in a scientific method-like manner. And that is definitely missing from the future painted out by Mike Judge and Idiocracy.
You know, it's interesting also to point out that when he's trying to explain himself logically, he can't communicate with the people. And I think we can draw parallels to how we try to explain sometimes things logically with people and friends and family that we can't, or, you know, get them to relate to, because they don't have the tools either. And so what we're witnessing here with Mike Judge and his satire is that the numbing down of language for these people, because language is the development of consciousness and being able to identify more things in the relationships within that reality in which you experience. So the loss of the trivium is really the loss of that, just your basic way how we process information. And that, you know, as they got more and more dumbed down and reality got pushed and pushed further and further away, they became more and more irrational, and they couldn't find any ways to relate back to reality. Now they had this food crisis and this trash crisis and all these crises that they had no way of working through anymore.
One of the other smart things that the idiots do that kind of struck me was when Joe is able to escape from prison, and I won't spoil that. That's one of the best, I think, moments of the film. The first time he escapes from prison, of course, then later gets recaptured. They then put a big boulder on him, you know, in the old school prison style, you know, attached to his ankle. And it's this huge boulder. So when they bring him to rehabilitation night, when he has to fight these monster trucks and he gets his own little beat up little tiny car, they're trying to close the door and it's hitting the chain. And, you know, of course, the door's not going to shut over a chain that's tied to, you know, chained to my ankle. The idiots figure out, they use the bulldozer and drop the boulder on the back of the car and say, who's smart now? It was just those few couple of moments that I did enjoy where the idiots outsmarted our smart characters.
Yeah, they used the most basic and rudimentary logic to put things together, and it's somehow effective. So it shows, you know, even at our dumbest, we can barely function, but it's really just like you really, is that the level of living that you want to function at, you know? So I think in the end, Mike Judge is both giving us a reflection of our society and what it could become, and that it, you know, to heed this warning, we just need to prevent that future from happening by reinstating the trivium, getting real critical thinking and identification of logical fallacies, learning how to communicate effectively and nonviolently, and, you know, just understanding that there's a lot more to reality than, you know, American gladiators, sports, and other things which serve as both entrainment and entertainment. So, you know, we can resist the draw and pull of culture and society by just independently thinking and thinking critically, and then we can prevent an idiocracy from continuing to perpetuate, because we're really living in a version of an idiocracy, and the only way to cure that is to learn our way out. So
basic logic worked against you know, the dumb people, because he ended up, I don't want to give it away, but he ended up outsmarting them at the end, at least during the gladiator match, or wrestling match, or whatever the what was it called?
Rehabilitation.
So he ends up kind of getting the last laugh in the end. So that basic logic, you know, he was able to build on what they'd done, and then I don't want to give it away because it was kind of funny how he worked it out. But
I also enjoy the and I think it's at rehabilitation. I don't believe it's in the the House of Representing. The guitar me, the whole group of guys all playing the guitar as the sort of musical accompaniment, I kind of enjoyed. I was like, oh, I could handle that.
Guitar army, yeah, guitar me. I think the other thing we didn't touch on, which is probably not that relevant, but Mike Judge also purposely cast people of all racial backgrounds and then gave them all the same kind of like weird black sort of Jerry Curl wig. And in that way, I think he was representing that in the, you know, in the 500 years, all the races have mixed together. And so, you know, in that
and
part of
America, obviously white people are named Hector. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's got sort of a Spanish sounding name. Even the lawyer character, Frito Pendejo, his name literally translates in Spanish to fried dickhead. But these silly, silly names. A lot of people have, you know, Dr. Lexus. They either have advertising names, like that's, people started naming their kids after products and brands. And again, like Mike Judge thought through a lot of aspects of the future and about contemporary society when he was writing and making this film. So I think it's going to hold the test of time, and people every 10 or 20 years can use it as kind of a gauge, like how close to idiocracy are we now, or are we moving further away? And in that way, it's a very useful film that everyone should check out.
I think it's also interesting that what Judge portrays as 500 years or so in the future is actually only like 10 or 15 or 20 years in the future. Yes, he doesn't refer to families, and so that's kind of a Huxleyan Brave New World where the state controls it. But what you see is by all the races having mixed, you don't see or hear about wars of nationality. You don't hear about racism. They're all united in their ignorance. And so it shows that, yeah, it's possible on that level. So why can't you do it on an intellectual level? What allows people of an intellect to be tricked into dehumanizing people on the other side of the world and being tricked into paying to go fund excursions, whether it's Smedley Butler back at the turn of the 20th century going into all these countries for these corporations, or today's wars of aggression for, you know, empire building and corporate dominance over countries they haven't yet dominated. So you're seeing all the seeds. There's definitely a reflection of corporate personhood still being a myth, still realized as a reality in that future that he paints out. And I think that there's not only the lack of critical thinking that's there, but the loss of being able to just discern basic structures of how we got here, or any appreciation for the past or history, and that doesn't allow them to get very much at all out of their present, which creates a void, which is easily then filled by these corporations and their advertising media and et cetera, that he shows throughout the film. So what you're seeing is, what, you know, ask the question, what creates that void in the education system? What creates that void in their sense of history and all these things? And who does it benefit? Well, when you look into actual reality, who it benefits are the people that are running the status quo, that benefit from the status quo, that created the mandatory school systems so that they could have corporate worker bees that were separated from their kids and the states raising their kids, and they got both parents working, which doubles the workforce, halves the cost of labor. So the labor cost drops because they've now doubled the workforce, including women in the workforce, taking them away from being able to raise their kids outside of the state, leaving them for state-dependent education systems, which are compulsory. And when you look in the origins of who created these systems, these people did not have our best interests at heart. And when you read the quotes about what they're saying education is really about to them, it's not something that's pretty, but it is reality. And that's where Mike Judge is really pointing us toward what creates these vacuums, which causes these ill causalities that he's painting out. And how do we reverse engineer what he's showing us to apply it to the problems we have right now? Because they all have the same root cause. Irrationality, a lack of presence of a methodology to turn confusion into certainty and understanding and knowledge, and to be able to communicate that to other people. He definitely paints a void where there's a future that doesn't exist. And if we have anything to do with it, I think our energy should be in making sure that those types of resources exist for people in the future, and that they do have access, so that we don't keep repeating the mistakes of the past and keep manifesting ourselves into idiocracy.
You know, I think a good analogy here is the analogy of the artists, and you know, in our situation, put in the corporations and the multinationals and you know, the various front groups or roundtable groups and so forth and so on. But they're the ones painting this box up with all the rules and stuff, and then they have to fit us into those rules. And what's happening is slowly, more slowly, they're taking how to learn. Well, it's already been taken out of our education for a couple of generations now, and we're seeing the effect of the last move into, you know, mass globalization, a new world order, and those types of things. So it's interesting that they had to fit us in. They had to first devise the plan and make sure we fit into that plan, because naturally that doesn't agree with natural law and all these other things in ethics and law, cause and effect. Exactly.
And I believe as we start to draw this second episode of Navigating Netflix to a close, and I don't want to cut anyone off, and we'll give anyone the chance to kind of wrap things up, I do want to mention, I think like other Mike Judge films, this is one that you want to stick around through the credits, because there is some more to be revealed at the end of the credits. And are there any other points, any other kind of wrap-up points that anyone wants to make?
I'd say that none of this content that we're talking about is really alien to us, because everything that's covered in Idiocracy, available on Netflix, or Joe Rogan Live, available on Netflix, like, one can spend an evening watching the television and really get a real education, or at least a step in the right direction, because once you have an idea of how these things are going to take causal effect and consequent, you know, consequences on our future generations, then you have the perspective to see how important it is to really look into these things, to understand what is creating these voids in education and self-reliance and abilities to deal with everyday situations. And it starts with being able to compare what we're seeing now with our five senses to that which we know to be true in the past, and to clean up what we understand of the past by applying the trivium and identifying fallacies and myths and other things that have been misinterpreted, and to have a good data set to reference, so that what you're referring to as history and looking at real time, you're getting the most out of. And what Judge is showing you is a future that is highly inefficient. And it's inefficient because of how these people invest their habitual time. And so if you want to do something that creates a future other than what is painted in Idiocracy, you really have to assess what you're doing with your time, because that's the most valuable asset that you have. And it's the one which you're constantly investing all day. And if you're not making quality decisions based on high levels of certainty, you're not getting the results you want, which means you have a high level of inefficiency, which adds up to what Judge is painting. So in order to get it back, in order to get that all back on level and give yourself some equilibrium and some serenity, you need to have a methodology by which you take your five senses, process it with thinking and non-contradictory identification, such that you can have a picture of reality, a map of reality, which actually reflects the terrain, which is something they purposely do not give young people. And that tells you about who we're dealing with. That's what Judge is pointing to. The people that run this planet undermine us at a very young age. They go after the children. The children are the key to their power. We're all children at heart. We have had our curiosity amputated. And if we can get that back, and it starts with asking questions and observing what's going on. And once you get that back, you're a kid again, because now you have the ability to learn. And any single mind which escapes the system is a threat to that which is used to control everyone else on this planet for the past 5,000 years. But it doesn't have to be this way. We all have the ability to learn equally.
Right. What he does actually, painting the satire, really all I see is a lot of solutions. If we now recognize what's in front of us, and there's so many different satires throughout mass medium, popular culture, and all those types of things, that if we just pick up on the underlying connotations, what they're trying to tell us, we can start moving forward with the practical solutions to the problems which confront us. So, yeah, I mean, that's one thing I think we can use media for. And you know, this is why Navigating Netflix and you guys created this, is to give that greater underlying connotation, the context to the movie, movies, and how that can be an impetus to greater learning, maybe going digging deeper into books and so forth and so on, or more detailed media. But, you know, you guys do a great job so far.
Thanks.
Paul, yeah. Any final words?
I was just going to say, you know, films, you know, the whole overlying purpose of doing something like Navigating Netflix is because films are a multilateral form of communication, audio, video, multi-level. You know, there's this, like, the set rhetoric, like Rich was mentioning, the, you know, what the actors are conveying on their multi-level with their words and their emotions and all these things. And so it's emulating a human experience or a story experience. It's myth come to visual life. And so it can be it is a very, very powerful tool to either control or instruct or educate. And so, you know, what we're trying to do is use video and audio to educate people to think more independently, to think for themselves more. And the mainstream media is using this same tool to, you know, dumb us down and form us into narrower and narrower molds. And so you just have to, like, again, what Rich said about reevaluating the use of your time, taking time to create media or to watch empowering media is instantly a lot better use of your time than watching Dancing with the Stars or American Idol or something that not only doesn't empower your life, doesn't teach you anything, but at the end, you don't have any return on investment whatsoever, other than you can go talk to someone else at work who also watched the dumb program and share the same banal thoughts, as Alan Moore would say. So, you know, we're going to continue to feature films that we think are intelligent or have something to say or are a symbol or metaphor as of a reflection for the system. And so we hope that you'll tune into the next episode.
All right. Tony Myers and Richard Grove of TragedyandHope.com and Paul Verge of RemedyRadio.com. My name is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. This has been the second episode of Navigating Netflix, the movie review show with a conscience. And I also just want to mention quickly at the end that these episodes are put out on a number of different platforms, and we have blip.tv/navigatingnetflix, and I'm also working on archive.org/navigatingnetflix, and Paul, I believe this goes out on your YouTube channel. We also have audio-only versions, so if people just want the MP3 of these conversations, you can put that on and listen to it. Just a way to try and, you know, build out the redundancy and spread this out to as many folks as possible.
And if you're interested in learning more, tragedyandhope.com and peacerevolution.org, remedyradio.com, mediamonarchy.com. Did I forget any?
I think that's everything.
I like just to say thank you.
It's really the key too, is something that we, you know, and I almost forgot. I'm glad you just mentioned it, that this show grew out of a message board, a group within the tragedyandhope.com community. So these episodes, of course, will always be free and available, and anyone and everyone can watch them. But if you want to go, as Pauline Kael called it, deeper into movies, we'll offer you an invitation to the tragedyandhope.com community where you can join Navigating Netflix, as well as Trivium, education groups, and so many, many other groups. So this is sort of hopefully the candy that will get you interested to come into the community and go deeper.
You know, I just want to say thank you to you guys for allowing me to participate today. So, you know, I really enjoy the media you're putting out, and I follow it continuously, especially being a part of the community. So, you know, I really appreciate this, and I thought we had a good discussion.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to go drink some Brondo because it's got electrolytes, and you guys enjoy the rest of your day.
All right. Right on, man.
Take care.
Take care, guys. Peace.